Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 986. Walking the Snake with Breitbart Part 3. This is being recorded on November 28th of the year 2017. There is an awful lot going on. There's way too much going on to really be effectively covered. If I could do an hour program every day, a new one, with a description, I still would not be able to do justice or cover what is going on. So it is always something of a coin toss as to what to do. I find the charges of sexual harassment against Al Franken, after they were foreshadowed by Roger Stone, the longtime dirty tricks maven of the GOP and the Trump machine, to be more than a little interesting. And I think we'll take a look at what has happened to Al Franken with the Roger Stone direct foreshadowing of what happened. And also, I find it interesting that John Conyers, who was sullied as the Kremlin's man in Congress, which, after he highlighted and officially opposed providing U.S. funding and training for Nazi elements in Ukraine, he was tabbed in a column which I have had in For the Record 985, the description for the Record 985. He was tabbed the Kremlin's man in Congress. And now, of course, he has come under fire for sexual harassment, or real or alleged. And I think when talking about some of what is going on with the hashtag MeToo movement, I think separating the people who are accusers and or media go-to people or enablers, such as Roger Stone, from the actual act of sexual harassment, real or alleged, is something to pay attention to. And in particular, the selectiveness of what is going on is something that I find interesting. This is not to say that there are not plenty of dirtbag men using leverage for all kinds of things inside of Hollywood and outside. It would not surprise me one bit if the vast bulk of these charges was absolutely correct. However, I think the lack of due process and some of the interesting connections, such as a former runner-up to the Miss Italy contest who helped to break the word about Silvio Berlusconi's bunja parties, as he called them, basically sex orgies for Berlusconi and his fellow luminaries, political and media. And she wound up wearing a wire for the NYPD stinging Harvey Weinstein. I thought that was, well, she gets around in this, particularly as Harvey Weinstein was, he is a longtime bankroller of Democratic causes and was actually for a time in the recent past the employer of Malia Obama, former President Barack Obama's daughter. And those are things that are going to have to wait. Some remarkable things going on in the world of tech as well. Just amazing things. However, I thought I hate the term, but the quote alt-right unquote, bringing into focus American fascism in a way that it has not been brought into focus before. I think further exploring this in the context of the Nazi-tracked Serpent's Walk that I have accessed and referenced for so many years would be worthwhile. In Serpent's Walk, recall, the Third Reich goes underground, buys into the opinion-forming media. This is critical. Infiltrates the military, and then after the U.S. is attacked by a series of WMD strikes, which lead to the declaration of martial law. The Nazi-infiltrated military then takes over the country. However, the key to Serpent's Walk, and I will have this recapped in the written description for the show, is the opinion-forming media, which basically takes the country back from the politically correct people and influences the mainstream people, or what people are now calling working-class whites, who, quote, had begun to have their fill of multiculturalism and government-enforced, quote, equality, unquote. And as I have said before, I think Serpent's Walk is much more than just a novel. I think it is very much like the Permit Diaries. It is a blueprint and a manifesto for what the Underground Reich, and its more or less above-ground enablers and basically extension tentacles, to coin the term, are in the process of doing. In this show, I'm going to be reading an article from BuzzFeed from October 5th of 2017. And the reading of this article will, I think, occupy all of this program, part and perhaps part of the next. And the alt-right, unquote's, use of YouTube, which they're using very skillfully, will also, I think, fit necessarily into the Serpent's Walk template that I have been accessing for so many years. So again, from BuzzFeed, October 5th of 2017, by Joseph Bernstein, Alt-White, How the Breitbart Machine Laundered Racist Hate. And I think this article will pretty much speak for itself, and it shows, I think, the skill, frankly, and they are much more skilled at this than people in the so-called progressive sector, who really aren't very good at much of anything when it comes to presenting messages. It shows the skill that people like Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos, sort of the Ernst Röhm of the contemporary racist movement in this country, and someone we should note here, who, because he officially decries racism and anti-Semitism, and because he has some powerful financial backers who can rattle legal sabers, he is able to present himself quite effectively. Something to note, and it's against the background of some of the things that Yiannopoulos has been able to choke back down the throats of critics. And also, I think some of the things that are taking place with the hashtag MeToo movement, and again, this is not to say that many or perhaps most of those charges may be, perhaps all of them practically, are true. But I'm suspicious of many aspects of it. It feels like an op. It is taking attention away from, for example, from things that happened with Fox News or Donald Trump personally, who mini-groped his own adult daughter Ivanka on stage at the Republican convention, something that was not written about at all in the mainstream media. And I also find it interesting that as the charges against Roy Moore running for a Senate seat in Alabama have surfaced, Roger Stone directly foreshadows the surfacing of charges against Democratic Senator Al Franken from Minnesota. One of the things to remember is that litigation is extremely expensive. And for a public figure in the U.S., this would not be true in the U.K., for example, which has different libel and defamation laws. But in the U.S., it is relatively difficult for a public figure to sue unless they have lots of money. and can just basically afford to chase someone around and around and around with lawyers or private investigators or what have you. And third-party slander or defamation is effectively impossible for a public figure in the U.S. to litigate. So that is something to remember. And the Mercer family, who for a long time were behind Breitbart, had no shortage of money. And the Breitbart machine is well-funded and has been able to rattle legal sabers in order to back down people who were pointing an accusing finger at what was happening at that publication or at that website. So again, against the background of Serpent's Walk, we present again alt-right, how the Breitbart machine laundered racist hate, by Joseph Bernstein, and it reads with the introduction. Here's how Breitbart and Milo Yiannopoulos smuggled Nazi and white nationalist ideas into the mainstream. A cache of documents obtained by BuzzFeed News reveals the truth about Steve Bannon's alt-right killing machine, unquote. In August, after a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville ended in murder, Steve Bannon insisted that, quote, there is no room in American society for neo-Nazis, neo-Confederates, and the KKK. But an explosive cache of documents obtained by BuzzFeed News proves that there was plenty of room for those voices on his website. During the 2000 presidential campaign under Bannon's leadership, Breitbart courted the alt-right, the insurgent, racist, right-wing movement that helped sweep Donald Trump to power. The former White House chief strategist famously remarked that he wanted Breitbart to be, quote, the platform for the alt-right, unquote. The Breitbart employee closest to the alt-right was Milo Yiannopoulos, the site's former tech editor best known for his outrageous public provocations such as last year's dangerous faggot, unquote, speaking tour and September's canceled Free Speech Week in Berkeley. For more than a year, Yiannopoulos led the site in a coy dance around the movement's nastier edges, writing stories that minimized the role of neo-Nazis and white nationalists while giving its politer voices, quote, a fair hearing, unquote. In March, Breitbart editor Alex Marlowe insisted, quote, we are not a hate site, unquote. Breitbart's media relations staff repeatedly threatened to sue outlets that describe Yiannopoulos as racist. And after the violent white supremacist protest in Charlottesville, Virginia in August, Breitbart published an article explaining that when Bannon said the site welcomed the alt-right, he was merely referring to, quote, computer gamers and blue-collar voters who hated the GOP brand, unquote. These new emails and documents, however, clearly show that Breitbart does more than tolerate the most hate-filled, racist voices of the alt-right. It thrives on them, fueling and being fueled by some of the most toxic beliefs on the political spectrum and clearing the way for them to enter the American mainstream. It's a relationship illustrated most starkly by a previously unreleased April 2016 video in which Yiannopoulos sings, quote, America the Beautiful, unquote, in a Dallas karaoke bar as admirers, including the white nationalist Richard Spencer, raise their arms in Nazi salutes. These documents chart the Breitbart alt-right universe. They reveal how the website, and in particular Yiannopoulos, links the Mercer family, the billionaires who fund Breitbart, to underpaid trolls who fill it with provocative content, and to extremists striving to create a white ethno-state, i.e. walking the snake with Breitbart. They capture what Bannon calls his killing machine in action as it dredges up the resentments of people around the world, sifts through these grievances for ideas and content, and propels them from the unsavory parts of the internet up the Trump world, collecting advertisers' checks all the way. And the cache of emails, some of the most newsworthy of which BuzzFeed News is now making public, exposed the extent to which this machine depended on Yiannopoulos, who channeled voices both inside and outside the establishment into a clear narrative about the threat liberal discourse posed to America. The emails tell a story of Steve Bannon's grand plan for Yiannopoulos, whom the Breitbart executive chairman transformed from a charismatic young editor into a conservative media star capable of magnetizing a new generation of reactionary anger. Often the documents reveal this anger came from a legion of secret sympathizers in Silicon Valley, Hollywood, academia, suburbia, and everywhere in between. I have said in the past that I find humor in breaking taboos and laughing at things that people tell me are forbidden to joke about, unquote, Yiannopoulos wrote in a statement to BuzzFeed News. But everyone who knows me also knows that I am not a racist. As someone of Jewish ancestry, I, of course, condemn racism in the strongest possible terms. I have stopped making jokes on these matters because I do not want any confusion on this subject. I disavow Richard Spencer and his entire sorry band of idiots. I have been and am a steadfast supporter of Jews and Israel. I disavow white nationalism and I disavow racism, and I always have, unquote. Now, skipping down. Now, Bannon is back at the controls of the machine, which he has said he is revving up, unquote. The Mercers have funded Yiannopoulos' post-Breitbart venture, and these documents present the clearest look at what these people may have in store for America. By the way, the Mercers are withdrawing from, at least overtly withdrawing from the Breitbart financial backer position. A year and a half ago, Milo Yiannopoulos set himself a difficult task to define the alt-right. It was 5 months before Hillary Clinton named the alt-right in a campaign speech, 10 months before the alt-right's Great Hope became president, and 17 months before Charlottesville clinched the alt-right as a stalking horse for violent white nationalism. The movement had just begun its explosive emergence into the country's politics and culture. At the time, Yiannopoulos, who would later describe himself as a fellow traveler, unquote, of the alt-right, was the tech editor of Breitbart. In the summer of 2015, after spending a year gathering momentum through Gamergate, the opening salvo of the new culture wars, he convinced Breitbart upper management to give him his own section. And for 4 months, he helped Bannon wage what the Breitbart boss called in emails to staff, quote, hashtag war, unquote. It was a war, fought story by story against the perceived forces of liberal activism on every conceivable battleground in American life. Yiannopoulos was a useful soldier whose very public identity as a gay man, one who has now married a black man, helped defend him, his anti-political correctness crusade, and his employer from charges of bigotry. But now, Yiannopoulos had a more complicated fight on his hands. The left, and worse, some on the right, had started to condemn the new conservative energy as reactionary and racist. Yiannopoulos had to take back alt-right, unquote, to redefine for Breitbart's audience a poorly understood, liberalist movement, parts of which had already started to resist the term itself. So he reached out to key constituents who included a neo-Nazi and a white nationalist. And the first neo-Nazi here is Andrew Weave Auernheimer, who was a guest at Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras' Polk Award reception celebration. quote, "Finally doing my big feature on the alt-right," Yiannopoulos wrote in a March 9, 2016 email to Andrew Weave Arenheimer, a hacker who is the system administrator of the neo-Nazi hub, the Daily Stormer, and who would later ask his followers to disrupt the funeral of Charlottesville victim Heather Heyer. Fancy brain dumping some thoughts for me? It's time for me to do my big definitive guide to the alt-right, Yiannopoulos wrote 4 hours later to Curtis Yarvin, Y-A-R-V-I-N, a software engineer who under the nom de plume Mencius, Moldbug, M-O-L-D-B-U-G, helped create the neo-reactionary movement which holds that enlightenment democracy has failed and that a return to feudalism and authoritarian rule is in order. Quote, which is my whorish way of asking if you have anything you'd like to make sure I include, unquote. Alt-right feature figured you'd have some thoughts, Yiannopoulos wrote the same day to Bevan Saucier, S-A-U-C-I-E-R, who helps edit the online white nationalist magazine American Renaissance under the pseudonym Henry Wolf, and who wrote a story in June of 2017 called Why I Am, Among Other Things, a White Nationalist, unquote. All three, Arenheimer, Saucier, and Moldbug or Yarvin, responded at length. Weave about the Daily Stormer and the podcast called The Daily Shoah, Yarvin in characteristically sweeping world historical assertions, it's no secret that North America contains many distinct cultural ethnic communities. This is not optimal, but with a competent king, it's not a huge problem either, unquote. And Saucier, with a list of thinkers, politicians, journalists, films, Dune, Mad Max, The Dark Knight, and musical genres, folk metal, martial industrial, 80s synth pop, important to the movement. Yiannopoulos forwarded it all, along with the Wikipedia entries for alternative right and the esoteric far-right Italian philosopher Julius Evola, a major influence on 20th century Italian fascists and Richard Spencer alike, to Alam, A-L-L-U-M, Bokhari, B-O-K-H-A-R-I, his deputy and frequent ghostwriter whom he had met during Gamergate. Include a little bit of everything, unquote, he instructed Bokhari. I think you'll like what I'm cooking up, Yiannopoulos wrote to Saucier, the American Renaissance editor. I look forward to it, Saucier replied. Bannon, as you probably know, is sympathetic to much of it. 5 days later, Bokhari returned a 3,000-word draft, a taxonomy of the movement titled Alt-Right Behemoth. It included a little bit of everything, the brains and their influences, Yarvin and Abel, etc., the natural conservatives, people who think different ethnic groups should stay separate for scientific reasons, the meme team, 4chan and 8chan, and the actual hate-mongers. Of the last group, Bokhari wrote, there's just not many of them. No one really likes them, and they're unlikely to achieve anything significant in the alt-right, unquote. Magnificent start, Yiannopoulos responded. Over the next 3 days, Yiannopoulos passed the article back to Yarvin and the white nationalist Saucier, the latter of whom gave line-by-line annotations. He also sent it to Vox Day, a writer who was expelled from the Board of Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America for calling a black writer an ignorant savage, unquote, and to Alex Marlowe, the editor of Breitbart. Solid, fair, and fairly comprehensive, Vox Day responded with a few suggestions. Most of it is great, but I don't want to rush a major long-form piece like this, Marlowe wrote back. A few people will need to weigh in since it deals heavily with race, unquote. Also, there was another sensitive issue to be raised, credit. quote, Adam did most of the work on this and wants joint byline, but I want the glory here, Yiannopoulos wrote back to Marlowe. I am telling him you said it sensitive and want my byline alone on it. Minutes later, Yiannopoulos emailed Bokhari, I was going to have Marlowe collude with me about the byline on the alt-right thing because I want to take it solo. Would you hate me too much if I do that? Truthfully, management is very edgy on this one. They love it, but it's racially charged, and they would prefer it, unquote. Will management definitely say no if it's for both of us? Bokhari responded. I think it actually lowers the risk if someone with a brown-sounding name shares the byline. 5 days later, March 22nd, Marlowe returned with comments. He suggested that the story should show in more detail how Yiannopoulos and most of the alt-right rejected the actual neo-Nazis in the movement. And he added that Packies Magazine and V-Dare, two publications Yiannopoulos and Bokhari identified as part of the alt-right, are both racist, and we should disclaimer that or strike that part of the history from the article. The published story added in the passive voice, all of these websites would have been accused of racism, unquote. Again, the story went back to Bokhari, who on the 24th sent Yiannopoulos still another draft with the subject head, alt-right, mein Führer. Doesn't sound, you know, racist or neo-Nazi to me. I don't know. I don't know where people get this stuff. Continuing, on the 27th, now co-byline, the story was ready for upper management, Barry and Larry Solov, Breitbart's press-shy CEO. It was also ready on a separate email chain for another read and round of comments from the white nationalist Saussure, the feudalist Garvin, the neo-Nazi Weave, and the science fiction writer Vox Day. I need to go through this tomorrow in depth, although I do appreciate any piece that mentions Avalon, Bannon wrote on the 29th in an email titled, Steve wants you to read this. Marlowe sent Yiannopoulos a list of edits and notes Bannon had solicited from James Pinkerton, a former Reagan and George H.W. Bush staffer and a contributing editor of the American Conservative. The 59-year-old Pinkerton was put off by a cartoon of Pepe the Frog conducting the Trump train. By the way, Avila here, of course, is Julius Avila, a fascist mystic philosopher who was influential both in fascist Italy and among SS occult circles late in the war. We went into Avila in For the Record 947 and in many of our programs dealing with Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yaki and the Post-War Fascist International. The many programs dealing with that book, many interviews with its author, and I can't recommend that book highly enough. It is not an easy read, but I think anyone who truly wants to get a handle on some of the manifestations of contemporary fascism and where they come from, Dreamer of the Day, I think, is a must. And certainly for good background on Julius Avila, the Coogan text is fundamental. Resuming again, Yiannopoulos overlapping with what we've already seen. I need to go through this tomorrow in depth, although I do appreciate any piece that mentions Avila, Bannon wrote on the 29th in an email titled, Steve wants you to read this. Marlowe sent Yiannopoulos a list of edits and notes Bannon had solicited from James Pinkerton, a former Reagan and George H.W. Bush staffer and a contributing editor of the American Conservative. The 59-year-old Pinkerton was put off by a cartoon of Pepe the Frog conducting the Trump train. I love art, he wrote in line. I think Breitbart News Network needs a lot more of it, but I don't get the above. Frogs, Kermit, am I missing something here? Later that day, Breitbart published, quote, An Establishment Conservative's Guide to the Alt-Right, unquote. It quickly became a touchstone cited in the New York Times, the L.A. Times, the New Yorker, the CNN, and New York Magazine, among others. And its influence is still being felt. This past July, in the speech in Warsaw that was celebrated by the alt-right, President Trump echoed a line from the story, a story written by a brown-sounding amanuensis, all but mind-edited by a white nationalist, laundered for racism by Breitbart's editors, and supervised by a man who would, in short order, become the president's chief strategist. The machine had worked well. On July 22nd of 2016, Rebecca Mercer, Robert's powerful daughter, emailed Steve Bannon from her Stanford alumni account. She wanted the Breitbart executive chairman, whom she introduced as, quote, one of the greatest living defenders of liberty, unquote, to meet an app developer she knew. Apple had rejected the man's game, Capitol Hill Awry, in which the players delete emails a la Hillary Clinton from the App Store, and the younger Mercer wondered, quote, if we could put an article up detailing his First Amendment political persecution. Bannon passed the request from Mercer to Yiannopoulos. Yiannopoulos passed it to Charlie Nash, an 18-year-old Englishman whom he had met at the conference on the populist right-wing UK independent conference the previous year, and who started working as his intern immediately after that. Like some bleach blonde messiah of anti-political correctness, Yiannopoulos tended to draw in ideologically sympathetic young men at conferences, campus speeches, and on social media, accumulating more and more acolytes as he went along. In June of 2015, it was Ben Q, K-E-W, who invited Yiannopoulos to speak at the University of Bristol, where he was a student. Now he's a staff writer for Breitbart. In September of 2015, it was Tom Chicata, the treasurer of the class of 2017 at Bucknell University, who still writes for Breitbart. In February 2016, it was Hunter Swagger, S-W-O-G-G-E-R, the University of Michigan student and then the editor of the conservative Michigan Review, whom Yiannopoulos cultivated and brought on as a social media specialist during his dangerous faggot tour. Yiannopoulos called these young researchers his truffle hounds, unquote. Nash, who had just been hired by Breitbart at $30,000 a year after months of lobbying by Yiannopoulos, dutifully fielded the request from the billionaire indirectly paying his salary and turned around a story about the rejected Capitol Hill Awry app on the 25th, and a follow-up 5 days later, after Apple reversed its decision. Huge victory, Bannon emailed after the reversal. Huge win, unquote. This was the usual way stories came in from the Mercers, according to a former Breitbart editor, with a request from Bannon referring to, quote, our investors, unquote, or our investing partners, unquote. After Khan, as Bannon pushed Yiannopoulos to do more live events that presented expensive logistical challenges, the involvement of the investing partners became more increasingly obvious. Following a May Day event at DePaul University in Chicago in which Black Lives Matter protesters stormed a Yiannopoulos speech, he wrote to Bannon, quote, I wouldn't confess this to anyone publicly, of course, but I was worried last night that I was going to get punched or worse. I need one or two people of my own, unquote. Agree 100%, Bannon wrote. We want you to stir up more. Milo, for your eyes only, we are going to use the Mercer's private security company. And this again to provide physical security for Yiannopoulos and people at various public events. Just in passing, as distasteful as I find Yiannopoulos at all, I think the physical tactic of shutting down public speaking events by Yiannopoulos or anyone else is bad news, literally, and they are setting a precedent that I think they are going to come to regret. I do not agree. You know, there is all of this adolescent glee on the part of certain elements of the so-called progressive sector about how they were able to keep Yiannopoulos and other people of their ilk from speaking at universities or elsewhere. Again, I think they are opening a door that they are going to find impossible to close, and they themselves will be turned out of that door at some point in the future, allowing people to speak. However offensive their speech is simply a basic premise of healthy dialogue in a democratic society. Yeah, right, like that is what we are. No. But anyway, they're going to be very sorry about this one when they find out that it will be their voices who are silenced. Indeed, again, before continuing with this BuzzFeed story, the entire serpent's walk scenario of using of gaining control of the opinion-forming media in order to turn the American public sympathetic to a sympathetic position to fascism and ultimately to bring fascism and Nazism to the U.S., just take a look at Sinclair TV. Scores of television stations have been bought up by this right-wing media outfit, very much like Fox News. And now the Koch brothers appear to have been, they are purchasing Time Warner through a corporate entity called Meredith. And also take a look at what the FCC under Donald Trump is doing. They are dispensing with net neutrality. I think alternative voices are going to be few and far between. And I also want to recommend to people who listen to this program that they should, in my opinion, get a hold of the flash drive in which I have my entire life's work available, plus the books in the books for download section. The price I can't mention on the air. It is very modest, and I think having their own cachet of the information that I have done over the decades, almost 40 years on the air, I think it's going to be increasingly important, because who knows just how the SpitfireList.com website and those of other linked websites are going to be faring under the new, the brave new world of no net neutrality being issued in by the Trump FCC. Anyway, returning now to Walking the Snake with Breitbart and how Breitbart was something of a stalking horse for racist and fascist elements. Well, very, very skillfully doing two things. One, maintaining that they were not doing that and raffling legal sabers with the formidable economic forces or financial backers, the Bannons looming in the wings. And also at the same time, they have very skillfully drawn on very real dissatisfactions in this country. People are hurting in a variety of ways. And with a dumbed-down educational system, a corrupt media establishment, they are simply not being told why it is that they are suffering. And very skillfully, the Yiannopouloses and the Steve Bannons are walking the snake. They are using the opinion-forming media to change the minds, the hearts and minds of middle America, and turning them toward a fascist slash Nazi orientation. Resuming where we left off, after talking about how Yiannopoulos had been basically threatened or not roughed up, it doesn't say, but was basically intimidated by Black Lives protesters who says here stormed a speech he gave in Chicago. I need one or two people of my own, unquote, Yiannopoulos wrote. Agree 100%, Bannon wrote. We want to stir you up. We want you to stir up more. Milo, for your eyes only, we are going to use the Mercer's private security company. Copied on the email was Dan Fleuret, F-L-E-U-E, Dan Fleuret, F-L-E-U-E-T-T-E, Bannon's co-producer at Glittering Steel and the man who acted for months as the go-between for Yiannopoulos and the Mercers. As Yiannopoulos made the transition in the summer of 2016 from being a writer to becoming largely the star of a traveling stage show, Fleuret was enlisted to process and wrangle the legion of young assistants, managers, trainers, and other talent the Breitbart tech editor demanded he brought along for, demanded be brought along for. Right, this last couple of sentences again because I did not do a good job. Copied on the email was Dan Fleuret, Bannon's co-producer at Glittering Steel and the man who acted for months as the go-between for Yiannopoulos and the Mercers. As Yiannopoulos made the transition in the summer of 2016 from being a writer to becoming largely the star of a traveling stage show, Fleuret was enlisted to process and wrangle the legion of young assistants, managers, trainers, and other talent the Breitbart tech editor demanded be brought along for the ride. First came Tim Gionet, G-I-O-N-E-T, the former BuzzFeed social media strategist who goes by Bait Alaska on Twitter, whom Yiannopoulos pitched to Fleuret as a tour manager in late May. Gionet accompanied Yiannopoulos to Florida after the June 2016 Pulse nightclub killings in Orlando. The two planned a press conference outside the mosque attended by the shooter, Omar Mateen. Brilliant, Bannon emailed. By the way, they are all factories of hate, unquote. But after some impertinent tweets and backtalk from Gionet, Fleuret became Yiannopoulos' managerial confidant. He needs to understand that, quote, baked Alaska, unquote, is over, Yiannopoulos wrote in one email to Fleuret. He is not a friend, he is an employee. He is becoming a laughing stock, and that reflects badly on me. In another quote, I think we need to replace Tim. He has no news judgment or understanding of what's dangerous, thinks tweets about Jews are just fine. He seems more interested in his career as an obscure Twitter personality than my tour manager, unquote. At the Republican National Convention, Yiannopoulos deliberately chose a hotel for GNA far from the convention center, writing to another Breitbart employee, exactly where I want him. He needs the commute to remind him of his place. Gionet, I may be mispronouncing that again, G-I-O-N-E-T, did not respond to multiple requests by BuzzFeed News for comment. But Gionet, who would go on to march with the alt-right in Charlottesville, was still useful to Yiannopoulos as a gateway to a group of young, hip, social media-savvy Trump supporters. Yiannopoulos managed all of his assistants and ghostwriters under his own umbrella, using Yiannopoulos.net emails and private Slack rooms. This structure insulated Breitbart's upper management from the 4chan savants and Gamergate vets working for Yiannopoulos. And it gave Yiannopoulos a staff loyal to him above Breitbart. Indeed, Yiannopoulos shopped a separate Team Milo section to Dow Jones, which publishes the Wall Street Journal, in July of 2016. It also sometimes led to extraordinarily fraught organizational and personal dynamics. Take Alan Bakari, the Oxford-educated former political consultant whom Yiannopoulos rewarded for his years of grunt work with a $100,000 ghostwriting contract for his book, Dangerous. But the men were spying on each other. In April of 2016, Yiannopoulos asked Bakari for, quote, a complete list of the email, social media, bank accounts, and any other system and services of mine you have been accessing, and how long you've had access. Bakari confessed to having logged into Yiannopoulos' email and Slack and have used Yiannopoulos' credit card for an Airbnb, a confession Yiannopoulos quickly passed on to Larry Solov, S-O-L-O-V, the Breitbart CEO. My basic position is that he is not stable and needs to be far away from me, Yiannopoulos wrote to Marlowe and Solov. Meanwhile, Yiannopoulos had compiled a transcript of what he called, quote, a short section of 30 hours of recording down on paper, which appeared to be of conversations between Bakari and a friend. The newcomers brought in by Viognier weren't much better behaved. Yiannopoulos had to boot one prospective member of his tour squad, unquote, for posting cocaine use on Snapchat. Mike Mahoney, a then 20-year-old from North Carolina, had to be monitored because of his propensity for racism and anti-Semitism on social media. Mahoney was later banned from Twitter, but he's relocated to Gab, a free speech Uber Alles social network where he is free to post messages such as, reminder, Muslims are fags, unquote. Let me know if there's anything specific that's really bad, e.g. any Jew stuff, unquote, Yiannopoulos wrote of Mahoney in an email to another member of his staff. His entire Twitter persona will have to change dramatically once he gets the job, unquote. On September 11th, 2016, Mahoney signed a $2,500 a month contract with Glittering Steel. As the Dangerous Faggot Tour swung into gear, Yiannopoulos grew increasingly hostile towards Fluet, whom he excoriated for late payments to his young crew, lack of support, and disorganization. The entire tour staff is demanding money, Yiannopoulos wrote in one email to Fluet in October. No one knows or cares who Glittering Steel is, but this represents a significantly damaging risk to my reputation if it gets out, unquote. And in another, your problem right now is keeping me happy, unquote. Yet ultimately, Fluet was necessary, as he connected Yiannopoulos' madcap world and the massively rich people funding the machine. I think you know who the final decision belongs to, Fluet wrote to Yiannopoulos one day after one particularly frantic request for money. I am in daily communication with them, unquote. Yiannopoulos is, by the way, as we will see, Yiannopoulos's deliberate distancing himself with anti-Semitism loses a lot of its credibility when we see some of the Twitter accounts and email accounts that he was using. We probably won't get to that till our next program. Start continuing with this BuzzFeed article from October 5th of 2017. Yiannopoulos' star rose throughout 2016 thanks to a succession of controversial public appearances, social media conflagrations, Breitbart radio spots, television hits, and magazine profiles. Bannon's guidance, the Mercer's patronage, and the creative energy of his young staff had come together at exactly the time Donald Trump turned offensive speech into a defining issue in American culture. And for thousands of people, Yiannopoulos, Breitbart's poster child for offensive speech, became a secret champion. Aggrieved by the encroachment of so-called cultural Marxism into American public life, and egged on by an endless stream of stories on Fox News about safe spaces and racially charged campus confrontations, a diverse group of Americans took to Yiannopoulos' inbox to thank him and to confess their fears about the future of the country. and some of these disgruntled tech workers reach beyond the rank and file. Vivek Wadhwa, V-I-V-E-K-W-A-D-H-W-A, a prominent entrepreneur and academic, reached out repeatedly to Yiannopoulos with stories of what he considered out-of-control political correctness. First, it was about a boycott campaign against a Kickstarter with connections to Gamergate. Quote, "These people are truly crazy and destructive. What horrible people," unquote, wrote Wadhwa of the campaigners. Then it was about Y Combinator co-founder Paul Graham. Wadhwa felt Graham was being unfairly targeted for an essay he wrote about gender inequality in tech. "Political correctness has gone too far," Wadhwa wrote. "The alternative is communism, not equality, and that is a failed system." Yiannopoulos passed Wadhwa's email to Bakari, who promptly ghostwrite wrote a story for Breitbart. Social justice warrior knives out for startup guru Paul Graham, unquote. Wadhwa told BuzzFeed News that he no longer supports Yiannopoulos. And next, we're going to see Yiannopoulos and his relationship with Peter Thiel. You know, I think this might be a good place to leave off. We'll resume this in our next program. One of the things that we should note is that the social dislocation and resulting dissatisfaction that people like Donald Trump or Yiannopoulos or Steve Bannon have been able to reach is altogether real. I think I'm going to conclude this program with a musical selection from, well, we'll talk about it more. We're going to end this program with music, and I think it really highlights the state of affairs in this country that is being exploited by people like Yiannopoulos and Steve Bannon.
With a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line, a flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched so thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. That big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot, 'cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack, just busted concrete and rusted tracks. Empty storefronts around the square, there's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore. The bar's still open, but man, it's slow. The tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd gets thinner each day. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore. We'll be right back. bourgeois dream, just like the pictures in the magazine she found on the floor of the laundromat. A woman with kids can forget all that. If she comes up pregnant, what'll she do? Forget the career, forget about school. Can she live on faith, live on hope? High on Jesus or hooked on dope? When it's way too late to just say no, you can't make it here anymore. Like the ones we made before, except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin, or the shape of their eyes, or the shape I'm in? Should I hate them for having our jobs today? No, I hate the men sent the jobs away. I can see them all now, they haunt my dreams, all lily white and squeaky clean. They never known want, they never known need. The sh** don't stink and the kids won't bleed. The kids won't bleed in the damn little war, and we can't make it here anymore. Trash in the street, gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here anymore.
That was James McMurtry. We can't make it here anymore. The discontent that the likes of Yiannopoulos and Bannon et al. Are drawing on is very real. And what if one extends the Serpent's Walk scenario to Sinclair TV and the dissolution of net neutrality and the Koch brothers buying Time magazine? Then you add in outlets like Breitbart, and we're going to talk in an upcoming show about how the Serpent's Walk scenario applies to YouTube as well. We are in bad shape. This concludes For the Record program number 986, Walking the Snake with Breitbart Part 3. This has been recorded on November 28th of 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.